In this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking with Mike Fortune from Cable 14's The Hamilton Network about all kinds of stuff, from campaign promises to gun bans to Guy Lafleur and more. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
As always, it is the brightest conversation in Hamilton radio. We are going to be digging into a bunch of things that have been going on in the world. Some of them very serious, some of them less so, but still out there. And today, to help me, we need to have someone who can offer bright conversation. So we go to this guy often because he is fantastic at this, has great opinions, and is a great conversationalist and can handle anything. He is one of the co-hosts of the Hamilton Network on Cable 14. His name is Mike Fortune, who joins us now. Mike, thanks for doing this.
Hey, Scotty. Thank you very much for having me. Quite the introduction. I'll pay send the check in the mail a little later, pal.
Well, yeah, you know, it's okay. You don't need to because it's true. But let me ask you a quick thing before we start here. I saw something today that I had to look back and read this twice. A guy in Pennsylvania has joined the absolute elite. He joined the absolute elite today, or okay, yesterday, I guess. He became one of only 11 people in history around the world who has achieved a perfect score in Pac-Man.
What, I didn't realize there was a perfect score in Pac-Man.
There is a perfect score. He completed all 256 levels in 4 hours, 12 minutes, and racked up 3,333,360 points, which is the highest possible score. But here was why I had to look at this twice. Okay. I realized that somehow I have gotten in a time machine and been blasted back to 1982. Who plays Pac-Man anymore?
It must be some new 2K version where it's all 3D or something. But hey, going back with the basic and the oldies, what you and I grew up on, good for him. How many hours of practice has he been playing? Like,
oh, can you imagine? This game came out in 1980. He's probably been going nonstop since.
No doubt. That's quite the impressive feat. And you said only 11 have been able to do this?
Only 11. Now, here's the other question. If you were one of the 11, would you actually admit that to anybody?
I think nowadays with social media and all that, yeah, I think you do admit it. You let the whole world know, look what I've accomplished. They need their 15 minutes of fame. Look, we're talking about them.
We're talking about him.
Where does this guy live? Where is he?
He lives in Pennsylvania. His name is Jake Goldberg, which sounds like, isn't that the name of the wrestler from Once Upon a Time?
I believe so. Yeah, it certainly sounds like him.
maybe that's what he's done since he left the ring. I don't know. I just can't imagine someone has put in this much time to, in 2022, 42 years after this game came out, is still playing. Like, there's got to be another hobby.
Now, are you envisioning what I am? Are you envisioning that typical, you know, grown-up still living in his parents' basement playing this and doing it?
Yeah, with a little Cheeto dust on his undershirt and probably in some rather soily underwear. And pizza boxes everywhere. Yes, I am.
The empty 2-liter of Diet Pepsi's.
Yes. Yes.
The floor.
That's exactly what it is. And probably, you know, a guy who has been treated multiple times for carpal tunnel syndrome. It doesn't say how old he is here. So I don't know if he's one of these guys who's been playing since the 80s and finally achieved it. But if it is, you have essentially spent your life.
Yeah.
Working towards this. You don't even have time probably now to start working on, okay, now I'm going to switch over and try to set the world record in Donkey Kong or Frogger or Qbert.
But maybe you do. Maybe you do. I don't know. Okay. Now, if you have reached the absolute peak in Pac-Man, what, like, your life, does your life just stop? Like, I wonder if he's going through withdrawal now.
Well, I wonder if he's ever seen Ms. Pac-Man.
Well, if he's seen Ms. Pac-Man, then yeah, it might be a whole new game he's playing then. I don't know.
It could be off to a new thing. Now I got to try Ms. Pac-Man. Anyway, I saw this and I thought I must be in the wrong decade now. I didn't know anyone still played Pac-Man, but There you go. Someone has set the new world record.
Was that one of your go-tos when you were growing up, Scott? Was Pac-Man kind of the one? No, what was your go-to?
No, there was one, and I can't remember the name of it. It was, you drove this little buggy across the surface of the moon and had to jump craters, and I can't remember what it was. I'll find it during the commercial break here if I can. I mean, I don't even know how to look for it because I don't know what it's called. But that was right. Mine. But I didn't spend a lot of money in the arcade. Didn't put a lot of quarters in the machines. I had other things to do. But how about you?
I kind of went to, I liked the Pac-Mans and I liked the Space Invader one. That was kind of my go-to. And unlike you, lots of people don't remember this. You say this to kids nowadays. There used to be an arcade in Lime Ridge Mall where the movie theaters used to be. And we would spend Saturdays there countless hours, you know, throwing in quarters and playing all the games on. It was a great way to spend a Saturday. Clean and innocent fun.
I think I found Moon Patrol. Moon Patrol is what I used to love. Moon Patrol. Okay. And then there was the one, we got to run here. What's the one that you use? It's like Pong, but you've got the bar that moves at the bottom of the screen. You try to bounce the ball and break the blocks.
Yeah, I know exactly. Not Tetris. I know the one you're talking about.
It's like That's the other one too. But
I know the one you're talking about. That's a great. That's an addicting game. That one.
They all are.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Earlier this week, and we've talked about it a couple times this week on the show, and I know Scott Thompson has talked about it earlier this week. Stephen Del Duca, leader of the Provincial Liberal Party, in a number of campaign announcements, because the election, amazingly, is coming up quick on us. Just about a month, less than a month and a half from now, we'll be going to the polls for the provincial election. Announced that he intends to ban handguns if he is elected premier. Within a year, he will ban handguns in the province of Ontario. And it has been, like, he's offered a lot of other campaign things over the last number of days, but this one seems to be the one that has gained a lot of traction. And that seems to me because it's an easy one, quite honestly. It's one that people talk about. It's for whatever reason. But here's my question, Mike. Do you truly believe that if him or anyone else vows to ban handguns, that that's ever going to happen?
First off, I hope my audio is a little bit better for you there, Scotty.
It is. Thank you.
I would like to hope and believe that they would truly do their best to honor a commitment, especially one as serious and deadly as this. However, as we have seen time and time and time and time again, there are election promises weeks before that never get fulfilled. So as much as I don't want to be cynical about it, I would hope that if something does happen and the Liberals are voted in, that this is something that would take top priority, because we are losing too many lives, we are seeing too many horrific things happening, and too many families are being devastated. So if Mr. DeLuca thinks this is something that he is, I hope he's just not spitballing it out there and trying to get it to buy votes. I truly hope he is in the right place and his cabinet's in the right place and they will actually do something. I haven't seen a plan about it. You can say something
like
this, but let's see the plan. I want to see what is going, you're going to work with local law enforcement, OPPs. What are you going to actually do, as opposed to just saying, here's what we're going to do.
Well, what he said on the show, and, you know, I'm going to go back and listen to it again, not this moment, but was that he is going to be speaking with the upper levels of government and working with them to try and do something. Here's the problem I have with it. It's not the concept of we're trying to stop gun violence. Stopping gun violence would be a terrific thing. I just look at this and I think, okay, so you put a handgun ban in, so all the legal handgun owners now have to not have it, turn in their guns, whatever else. But it does nothing to stop the flow of handguns across the border, which the Chiefs of Police organization says is the cause of almost all of the handgun violence. To me, this is throwing something out there that sounds good but doesn't resolve the problem. Tell us what you're going to do to stop the flow of handguns into Ontario, and I am eager to listen to that. I can't wait to hear that, because that to me is solving a problem.
If you can solve that problem, you're going to make every chief, not only in Ontario, but across Canada, absolutely thrilled.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you've had the chats, but with Frank, Chief Bergen and Chief Gert over the years, it's one of the biggest thing that's going down And as great as our border system is, you're right. We can't stop the flow. So
look,
yeah.
If you own a handgun, and you own it legally, and you've got a license for it, and you've purchased it, and the government knows that you have it, and you've gone through all the steps, I don't worry about you using that handgun. Now, I understand that at times there are examples of people who are legal gun owners using them inappropriately or for some terrible thing. I know that happens. I'm not completely naive. But I also know from everything we hear that the vast majority of the guns that are on the street are either brought in or they are gathered some other way illegally. So what are you going to do with that? That to me is a way bigger issue.
And I think there is a difference between handguns, rifles, and what we are seeing out on the streets more are the semi-automatics, the really lethal ones. So is it going to include everything, or is it just going to encompass one portion of this deadly weapon?
Well, the reason I think that the handgun thing is pointed to often is because they're easy to conceal, so you can walk around. It's hard to carry an AK-47 down the street without someone noticing you, but you can tuck a handgun into your back of your pants or something, which is problematic. So my argument always has been on this one, and, you know, this never seems to be something that wants to be grabbed onto. My argument is, you can't ban these things. You can't simply say you're not allowed to have guns. I'm pretty sure the people who would use this to commit a crime couldn't care less what your ban is. So you say anybody who's caught with an illegal handgun, there is a minimum, automatic minimum sentence of 2 years in prison to start with. Or come up with something else where it is so punitive that it's not still going to stop everyone, but it's going to make a bunch of people think, well, what if I get caught with this? Maybe it's not worth it. And that still is not going to solve the full problem, but it's way better than whatever else is being proposed.
Quite possibly. But again, I also think, too, if you're an individual with a hand, to your point, if you have the license and you got the gun cage and you're doing everything properly, the ones that are using the gun for to get revenge or to hold up or to do harm, do you think they really care what the fine is? Because they know if they get caught for whatever they're going to do, there's going to be probably a stiff penalty anyway.
Of course.
So does really putting a heavy fine on if you have one illegally, is that going to help? Probably not either, because they'll just find another one. Because again, our court systems are all backed up, and you're not going to arrest everyone and put them in jail. We don't have enough room for those people either.
Well, look, one of the most ludicrous things I've heard in a long, long time was about a year and a half ago. Sorry to the mayor of Hamilton for bringing this up, but when he said we're going to ban handguns in Hamilton, and it's like, okay, wait a second. Your ability to impose a law is to add a bylaw. So someone who is walking around and is willing to use an illegal handgun to commit a crime, maybe kill someone and go to jail for 25 years, suddenly saying, oh, but you're going to get an extra $500 fine to go with it. That's going to be what stops them? Come on. Like, it's nonsensical. What you need is stricter, harsher penalties for those who would be caught with them and those who would use them. And even if that doesn't act as a deterrent, and I think to some it would, but even if it doesn't act as a deterrent, what you might do is get some of those people off the street for a while. And that's the best we can do, maybe.
And you also hope too that these handguns, these arms, don't get into the wrong hands, because I also do believe sometimes the guns get into the wrong hands of people that maybe don't know how to use it properly, or just, you know, the little kids who are goofing around. Unfortunately, that happens as well.
There's
a lot of loopholes in this, and to your point, it's great fodder for going into an election year for sure. But can you truly make a difference? And there's just a real deep part of me that thinks it's a lot of talk right now and nothing can truly be done.
Well, one other thing to your point, and it's a good point about, you know, there are sometimes kids that get into it and are harmed or whatever. If you have a legal handgun and something is done with it and a kid tragically is shot or someone, you use it wrong, we know exactly who that handgun belongs to and can find it and track it, and you are responsible for that. So it doesn't necessarily stop the crime, but it is a real deterrent because it's not a secret. We know who that is. And I believe that if you take the steps to go and get a license and pay and do your training and whatever else, probably you are more than likely going to be responsible with it. More than likely going to be responsible. Though I don't see those are being the people who are the ones causing the handgun problems on our streets that we need to be cracking down on. Go after the people who are really causing the problems. But this doesn't seem to me, this doesn't do that. But
and by that, you're going after the gangs, and then you're going, then you have to try to go one level higher and then another level higher. Because at the end of the day, the way the guns are all coming in are through the through other countries where so much money's on the line. They're the ones filtering all these in. So at what point, where does this whole plan work and how does it get put into place? Because, again, we've all talked to the chief. We've heard what the chiefs have said about how high importance this is, but you just can't manage. You just can't stop every gun from coming in.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Reading a story that was in the Toronto Star today about many employers now, because employees have high expectations, having worked at home, and now they say, I don't really want to necessarily come back to the office, or I don't want to work for you, or whatever. Employers now making all kinds of concessions, including allowing people to bring their pets to work every day, or whatever else. Is this a really good thing that COVID has done for us, that over 2 years we've said, you know what, the office should be much more like home? Or are we down a dangerous path now where we're saying the office is way too much like home? You're supposed to go to the office to work, not just to hang out at home.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a slippery slope once offices start to allow those types of things, because now you're going to get into a bunch of employee issues, potentially additional employee, you know, altercations. So I'm allergic to cats. I'm allergic to dogs. Why are they allowed to bring theirs in? You know, I want to bring my baby in. Next thing you know, you're going to have whole families coming in to work with mom or dad. Of course, I'm being a little facetious there, Scotty, but it's, I think we're swinging one way right now. And I think over time we will start to swing back, because as great as it probably is to have your dog or your cat at the office, or I think people are also truly missing their office time, their office and work family, the water cooler talk, the whiteboard conversations. And it is that for some families, it's a break from being at home all the time. You need to get out and do other things. So yes, employees are asking for a lot. And I think businesses have to watch it. And I'm sure a lot of employment lawyers, I should say, are getting involved and having some thoughts and discussions on this as well, too, as companies look to revamp their code of conduct or what's acceptable or not.
I love working from home. I love the convenience of it. I love the inexpensive coffee and the access to a clean bathroom and wearing whatever you want and all those kinds of things. But I got to tell you, I don't love the idea that I go to the office and everybody gets to bring home to the office with them. I'm with you. I think that if we are at a point now where employees can demand anything to make it more comfortable for, look, we want employees to be comfortable. We want them to work hard. We want them to produce. I'm just not sure that there should not be a more of a delineation between home and work. And I'm with you, if we blur that line too much, you know, I think all you're doing, as you've said, all you're doing is going to ask for problems. But beyond that, I do think there comes a point when comfort to produce becomes lack of production, because now it's too comfortable. Work is not, I don't think work is always supposed to be fun. You hope it's mostly pleasurable, but I don't think that work is supposed to be like going to the club or going to a movie or sitting on the couch. It's work to me.
It is work, and I know we're going to have a lot of animal lovers out there who disagree with what you and I are probably thinking and saying, and, you know, Mayor Eisenberger being one of them. He loves to bring his dog into the office, and that's not a slight. It's what's happening at City Hall. I would not feel comfortable going into an office knowing that dogs and pets are going to be running around, and who knows what they're bringing into the office with fleas, and, you know, how do you handle the washroom situation for the animals? It turns into a very complicated situation, and I'm fairly certain employers don't want to go down that road. Unless there is a reason to bring in a therapeutic dog, a seeing eye dog.
That's different. That's very
something
different.
Like that. With the doctor's note, with actually
different.
Saying so-and-so needs this for therapeutic reasons for anxiety. Okay, that's a different story. But if you're just going to bring in your dashed hound to let it run wild and all that and bark like crazy, that's where I think you got to really draw that line, have those tough conversations.
Look, and you're right. If someone needs a seeing eye dog, it would be outrageous to say you can't do that. No one, oh, and the dogs pipe up in the background just as we speak of this. They have something to say about this, obviously. Perfect timing. Yeah. But I'm looking at this and thinking, I don't want to go in, and I've got allergies to cats. I don't want to go in and have to now not be able to work properly because I have an allergic reaction. And where all of a sudden, and for, it's not just pets. Oh, we're talking about pets. In this case, it's like, okay, so now you have to tell some person in the office, no, you can't bring your cat because he's allergic. And then they say, yeah, but he's allowed to bring his dog. He's allowed to bring his hamster. But beyond that, all the other concessions that seems like we are required, and we probably sound like old men right now arguing about this, but all the other concessions and the things that, you know, I think there are some things that are a nice touch that offices can do. I think free coffee as a small thing, you know, that's a nice thing. I think having a sitting room where you can go and have your lunch or whatever, a comfortable one, not just broken, jagged plastic shard, plastic chairs jamming into your butt. I mean, having a nice sitting area would be a good thing, but I don't know that you need to have putting greens and saunas in the office.
Well, I'll take a putting green and a sauna. That's fine. I'll do that. Come on now. where I start to have, and this was kind of happening in a world that I was previously in, was these open spaces and these open concepts. And, you know, you didn't have like your little, your own area, your desk, your phone, because everything was mobile. And I was really missing that, especially when it comes to the privacy side of things. I need to make a lot of calls. They're not personal calls, but they're confidential calls with employee, with clients and all that. I don't need a whole office to hear what's going on. So I'd always have to find, I have to pick up my phone, find a little quiet corner somewhere. Like there's all these little things that are kind of happening and changing, which I guess are good, but I think employers are saying as well, maybe we have to maybe go back potentially a little old school, to your point, with a few little perks and niceties, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I guess maybe I am just old school on this one, but every time I see a video of some office for some startup computer app place or whatever, and it's people skateboarding around in the office, and like I'm like, a little professionalism. I get that it's young. I get that you're trying to be hip, and I get that you're trying not to make it look like it's work, but it is work, and there should be some professionalism. And you know, maybe some people listening say my office works fantastic without that because everyone gets everything done. All right. But the idea that now we have people essentially demanding that I can bring my pet or not willing to come back to the office if I don't get a pet or I don't get this or that, it's like,
We've really swung really to one side, even when it comes to, you know, how you dress in the office, you know, compared to back in the day. There is a level of lack of professionalism that's across the board. And to your point, you know, we're a little more old school. I know you don't have to go in suit and tie and all that, but, you know, you used to walk into the spec.
But I don't go in a t-shirt that's stained with ketchup down the front or whatever else. I mean, you at least try to look,
right?
Yeah, look reasonable. No, right, exactly. It doesn't have to be a suit, but it's still an office. You're still there for work. And again, I know some people are going to say, oh, don't worry about the boss. They're fine. I think you should show some respect for your employer by going in.
Not only
prepared
for
to
your
work.
Boss, show respect for yourself and your fellow coworkers and your clients. You're supposed to be, you know, dress for the interview, dress for the presentation type thing. Employees have, and you know, you're an employee, I'm an employee, but I do feel that employees are being given far too much leeway, and all you have to do is one call to HR or one call to a labor lawyer, and it's like you're going to find yourself in a position that will probably work out for you because companies are terrified of having to deal with all the legal ramifications.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Mike, simple question. and I've been asking this of a number of people, are you following now, it's 2 months, 2 months today since Russia invaded Ukraine. Are you following everything with the war very closely, or are you trying to tune some of it out because it's just so heavy all the time?
I'm going to go with the latter there, Scotty. When everything first kind of happened, I was, you know, pretty much not 24/7, but first thing in the morning, throughout the day in the background. And now what's happened, I think it's just become a little too much. And we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about, you know, what any of our leaders, would they do what Zelensky's doing, so on and so forth. And I had made the comment that it's very easy for us just to turn it off here and move on and go on with our lives. And I think that's what's happened, yet I'm still thinking about it. And I feel a little guilty, to be honest with you, but it got to be too much. And that's really unfair to say because, again, I'm privileged. My lottery ticket was being born in this country. And, you know, there are these people, when I say it's too much, what they're going through. So, long answer to your question, I'm not watching as much.
But that, I think, is the answer. I think, and I appreciate the honesty, because I think a lot of people, if you ask them, would say the same thing. And I'm not wanting to watch as much because it's just so heavy all the time. And all the things you said are bang on, but it is that way. It is that way to be following day after day after day after day, every twist and turn and every comment and every this and every that. It is really onerous. And you're absolutely right. Our onerous and the onerous of the people who are there are two entirely different things. We're not, and look, anyone who's listening and pointing that out, yeah, we know that. But I think a lot of people, even if they don't want to admit it, are saying, yeah, I'm not watching as much because it's so much to deal with all the time.
Yeah, and you look at what we've been through the last couple of years with COVID, and, you know, we were finally able to get out more. And I think we're all trying to get back to our lives as best we can, but I think we should all keep in mind that, you know, what's going on overseas is horrific. I would certainly hope it would never happen here, but you truly don't know what can happen from one day to the next, getting up, going to work, coming home, and the next day you don't even have a house to live in.
So should
we never happen here? But you never.
So Mike, should we not be doing that? Should we be not stepping away or taking our eyes off of this? Should we be not giving ourselves a break? Because that just is unfair to the people there and expresses some kind of, you know, situation where we're abandoning them even by taking a break from watching news coverage for a day or two. Should we force ourselves to stay involved because that's the only right thing to do?
Well, we're kind of forced to stay involved just through social media alone. No matter what format or platform you're on, there is something about the Ukraine and Russia. So, you know, being able to, you know, should you sit down and spend half an hour every day and watch and get updated? Well, I guess that's what the news at 6 is, or listening to the top stories on CHML at the top or bottom of the hour are about. But no, I don't think you should be forced to watch it. I think you need to
not
forced manage yourself and just, you know.
Not forced, but should you feel an obligation to do that?
I guess it all depends on who you are and what your thoughts are on everything. You know, I don't force myself to watch it, but I will tune in for a couple minutes as opposed to 6 hours now of having it on in the background, if that makes sense.
It does. As I say, I'm with you. I mean, I still keep up on it, and I still try to make sure I know what's going on, but I, too, am not watching as much as I was at the very beginning of it. And there are times I feel guilty about that because, again, I'm not in the position where my house has been blown up or where I've been chased out of my country or my friends have been killed or my country is under siege. And to say, you know, it's hard to watch all the time sounds kind of wussy, really.
And I think people, you know, people watch it all for different reasons. You have the people that are watching it because of the politics. You have the people that are watching it because of the military strategies that are being implemented or not implemented. And then you're having the people watching it because they want to see the devastation and the destruction. And they want to hear the stories of the families that have lost and the suffering that they're going through. So you also have different reasons why people watch, I think, as well.
Yeah, I'm never going to dump on someone who says that, even though, again, all everything we've said, that I'm not following as closely. I'm not watching CNN or Fox or MSNBC or whatever every single minute of every single day, because, again, we are blessed to be here and that we don't have the same problem. But, it's not just this. My answer to this has been, yes, it's convenient for us to say we can step away, but they can't step away. But then why is the war in Ukraine different from people who are dying of cancer or people who are victims of violence here or people who are homeless? You can literally, if you want to follow that logic, say, my day should be 24 hours a day for as many hours as I'm awake. I should be doing nothing but concentrating and focusing on the horrors that are going on in the world. Mm-hmm. That's a life that you're not going to have much of a life if that's the case. And again, we're blessed that we can step away, but I don't know how anyone could do that.
Yeah, no. And I think it's, the old saying is, life does go on, and it's true. Whether you've lost a loved one or there are issues in the world with diseases and heart disease and cancer, you still owe it to yourself, I think, to your family and to your kids to continue to try to build a life that you want. So if there's another way that you can, pay homage or pay attention to what's going on, then do it at your own set. But world does go on. We've seen it for millions of years now. Every day the sun rises and the sun sets, and you have to move on and you have to do what you need to do. So that's just how I kind of look at it, Scotty.
No, it's really, as I say, it's tough. And I understand the people who say that it's wrong to say you're going to take a break from it because the people there can't. And that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. But I do think you need to have a break at times. I do. And if that's wrong, well, it's an interesting discussion. It is an interesting topic about whether it's okay to try to step away and have a break from what goes on in the world.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
I know you did this a while ago. I don't know if you're still doing this, but I know that you tried this some time ago. There is a study out. It comes from Germany, from the, I'm going to massacre this, the Universität Bochum. All right. Anyone who's German, just listen to the radio and go, what did he just say? Okay. It's a German university. Let's just leave it at that. That the study says that if you cut down on your iPhone or smartphone time by 1 hour a day, you will see significant increase in your happiness levels. Do you agree with that?
100%. 100%. Not only have I done that, and I went on a bit of a diet. I've got back on slowly, but what I've also done now is I'm very selective with who I follow, because that's what it's all about. Is you can follow things that you really want to get involved with politically, whatever the case, or you can get. And so I've gotten rid of all the negativity and all the negative people that are on social media who like to stir the pot and raise their voices and put everything in caps and cause problems, have no answers. So now when I'm on social media, Scotty, yeah, I'll retweet my stuff from Cable 14. But for me, it's about baseball. It's about the Raptors. It's about Elvis. And I just focus on things that I enjoy now, as opposed to following every Tom, Dick, and Harry, because you have to have so many followers to be popular. I couldn't care less anymore. So I agree with that study, and I've taken it one step further.
The story about this says estimates show, and I think Germany may be doing something different from us, because I think they've way lowballed this. But anyway, estimates show the average adult spends about 3 hours daily scrolling away on their smartphone. I think I think that's way low, don't you? I think three hours is way low.
That sounds low as well. Yeah, that does sound a little low.
If you own a smartphone, if you own an iPhone, once a week or thereabouts, you'll probably get a notice that pops up telling you how much time on average you used. Mine has never been as low as 3 hours. Now, I use mine for other things as well, not just for scrolling. But
right, like you, I use mine for research. I'm in studio. A guest is coming in. I need to get on something quickly. I'll spend a few minutes doing that type of research for work purposes. Or if you're driving somewhere and you have to have the screen on to give you directions. But in regards to the social media side of things, I would tell everybody right now, if you can start to cut it out of your life, give yourself that half hour, 45 minutes every day, start something like that and work your way up to an hour or 2 hours, I think everyone's life would be a little happier, Scotty.
I really worry, and I'm not being funny, I'm not being ironic, I'm none of that. I really worry about the impact that this is going to have on, I mean, we're already into the generation that grew up with this. But going forward, we have kids that are kids now that have never lived life without Twitter, without TikTok, without Facebook, without
Snapchat,
whatever. All of them. Instagram especially. And so the idea for them, for us to say to them or the experts or this study, step away a bit, that's totally antithetical to their life. This is the life they've had from the time they were kids. Their parents do this, and this is very normal. It would be abnormal to step away. But because of that, I do worry about what this is going to mean down the road. Because I think you're absolutely right. I think we judge our popularity on number of likes or number of followers, or we don't judge it on, hey, does someone say that I'm a really good person or I'm a nice person or they like being around me? They judge it on those tangible numbers that you can now add up on your phone. And that to me is a dangerous, dangerous place to live.
Tangible numbers. And of course, we've heard about the body shaming and all the filters that can make you look like a supermodel, anything and everything that just keeps you addicted. And yeah, you know, I have a 13 and 17 year old. And it's the minute they both walk in the house after school and the data clicks on, that they're, you know, it should take you less than 10 seconds to take off your shoes. They're up there for 10, 20 minutes because their shoes are still on because they got to get all their updates. What have I missed today? It's like, really? Come on, guys. Like, there's more to life. That's why I'm thrilled that at least, you know, six nights a week, my daughter's in sports at least. So I know she's getting 3-4 hours a night where she's not on it. But it's tough to be a parent right now. I'm telling you, because the things I see, and I'm sure maybe you see, Scotty, I'm fearful as well. You know, they can't have conversations on the phone. They don't know cursive. They can't put together a full sentence because it's all short forms and acronyms, right?
When you took your social media diet, you call it, your fast, your whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. were you happier?
Very much so.
You really think so?
Very much so, hands down.
Why go back on then? If that was the case, why did you go back on?
For work purposes, you know. Not that cable 14 tells me that I have to be, but I also, you know, I have a brand. You have a brand. I guess you still have to kind of be out there. Now, I know there's people out there that probably say, "Well, no, you don't have to do that." And maybe I'm not doing it effectively enough because I'm not on as much as I should be. But I just feel that I should have some sort of small presence to help promote the station, our show, when we're on, some of the interviews that we're doing, so on and so forth.
It's an interesting one, this study. And I know that people will disagree. And you know, I really believe there are positives to social media. There can be good uses for it and for your smartphone. But boy, it just seems like so often it just takes us into swampland. It really does.
You can go down that rabbit hill so quick and 3-4 hours of your life is just gone.
Yeah. I mean, I was just Ben back at the office is saying that his fiance, her family lives out east. They're not next to each other. It allows people to stay in contact. That those kind of things are great purposes for a smartphone and for that kind of stuff. But again, I just, so much of this stuff I look at and I think, how many of the fights that we have, whether it's about politics or about this or about that, how many wouldn't be happening, or at least not to the extent they are, if we were not reading this social media stuff?
COVID showed that that the internet is a great thing and you can keep in contact. But yes, we have also learned that bullying and shaming and suicides are pushed upon because people don't get off. So you and I, we went to high school, and you know, we'd have a bad day, or we'd break up with a girlfriend, or vice versa. That was it. You didn't have to worry about it. Yeah, you worried about it, but you weren't able to follow them with the little blue dot or their avatar. Oh, because they're at Sir Alan McNabb. Oh, now they've gone to the Max, and you're not in the same. You weren't in the same groups. Now you're all in the same social groups on social media. You know what everyone's doing all the time. And it just, you don't get to shut it off and take a break and look at yourself internally.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's an interesting study, this one. If people are looking for it, the best way, just look up, the headline is, it's from a website called Study Finds, and cutting smartphone use by just an hour a day improves well-being for months is what the study has apparently found.
Don't worry about your follower count. Who cares how many people follow you? The less, the better. That's what I'm telling you.
Well, you know what? It's it's funny. We're going to move on, but we will in a second. One thing I think that you joke about that sort of, but I truly could see down the road that right now the whole point is to get the most number of people to follow you. I could see in a twist that there comes a point when status means being followed by fewer somehow. How that happens, I'm not sure, but everything always flips itself on its head eventually. I could see lesser followers, more exclusive clubs somehow could be a thing that becomes a big deal somewhere. I don't know how that would work, but I could see that.
Yep, so could I.
All right, we got time for one more thing I want to get into today, and it's sort of ironic. I, as a kid, growing up in Toronto, was never a fan, not a fan of Guy Lafleur, who passed away today, but I was completely aware and cognizant of what a star he was, which is probably part of the reason why I was never a fan, because frankly, when he was at his best, my team when I was a kid was the Philadelphia Flyers. I loved the Broad Street Bullies. Bernie Parent was my hero. Then it was the Canadians and Guy Lafleur who eventually ended their cup run. And so, you know, that's why. But I, you know, you could not help but be amazed by Guy Lafleur, not only as a player, but understanding even from as a young kid that there was something about him and the place where he played, him in Montreal, him in Quebec, that was special. As I say, Guy Lafleur died today. Is there a Montreal Canadian since Guy Lafleur that is that guy who is the face and symbol of Quebec? I'm not sure there is. He may have been the last of that.
Yeah, that Montreal team of the 70s and 80s, those were some special times, and those were some athletes back in the day that, you know, kind of drew the roadmap, if you will, for a lot of the superstars today. When I think of the Montreal Canadiens, you know, I guess I maybe think of Carey Price first, but is he truly as iconic as a Guy Lafleur, as a Larry Robinson,
no,
as the Rocket?
No,
not even close.
I wouldn't even put Larry Robinson in there. I wouldn't put Larry Robinson in there.
Okay,
I think if you go back that you've got maybe before, but you've got Rocket Richard, who, I mean, maybe the most legendary Montreal Canadian of all time. Maybe you've got Jean Béliveau. And remember, these guys are French players playing for the Canadians. And then Jean Béliveau and then Guy Lafleur, who, again, symbolic of not just a team, but of a province and a culture. And I don't know, I can't think that there's anybody that follows Guy Lafleur to this point. There may be down the road. I mean, Stéphane Richer scored a bunch of goals, but there's no way that he's in that conversation. Serge Savard was around that time. Patrick Roy, maybe you could make an argument, but I don't even think there. I don't know that the next Guy Lafleur has ever come along.
We've become so again, when we grew up, you know, your team was the Flyers, and you hated every team that played the Flyers, or every team that played the Flyers. My team for baseball was the Blue Jays. I hated every team. But I think as we get older, you know, you can start to appreciate sports and athletes and other teams and histories. But nowadays, it's all moving so fast for kids. I don't think there are truly be idols like there were when my dad grew up and when you and I were in that you know, the 70s and 80s, and that was awesome. I think a lot has changed now where you are not going to have that, where you're necessarily putting players on pedestals potentially as much, because you can't build a relationship with them because they're moving around for free agency in any sport.
Could be. I think that in Edmonton, there are a few. I think in Edmonton, Connor McDavid probably for kids is that. I think heaven knows if somehow the Leafs could ever get over the hump and win a cup, Austin Matthews and maybe Mitch Marner would be that. I think there can be some. But, you know, I look at Guy Lafleur again, and as a guy that, I mean, I hate to say this, I kind of hated him as a player, which is a compliment, because you knew that was the guy who was always going to do in your team. It's a compliment when you may not think it, but when you go into an opponent's arena and they boo you, Bobby Orr got booed every time. Wayne Gretzky got booed every time. To be booed in an opponent's arena means you matter. That's all it means.
You're doing something right, and you're breaking they're breaking your home team's dreams, so on and so forth. And you know, if we want to go one step further, about another loss that happened this week in the NHL, of course, Mike Bossy of the New York Islanders. Again, yeah, there was a Quebecer. Guy that was just a pure goal scorer, and he was a legend in New York with the Gorings and the Billy Smiths of that era. And again, I think that's another guy that if you're a New Yorker, you think of quite a bit as well.
Of course. And, you know, it's so interesting because Mike Bossy, even if Mike Bossy had played for the Canadiens, I mean, he would have been even more revered because he was a Quebec guy. He would have been even more revered in Quebec, although he didn't have the French name. And there's not much. I always have loved over the years how the French announcers have endeavored to Frenchify, to Francophony the names. So, you know, it was, you know, take any guy who's ever played there who was not a Quebecer, and you'll get the little bit of a French accent on the name a little bit. You can't do too much of that with Mike Bossy. Bossy. You can't. But, you know, the one guy, though, that I really have always wondered about, and he is always going to be tied to Guy Lafleur, because the year that Guy Lafleur was drafted, the Canadiens had the first overall pick, not because they were last, but because Sam Pollock, the GM, had swung an unbelievable trade to get the first overall draft pick, knowing Guy Lafleur was coming up. And he had traded with the California Golden Seals, who, whatever they were doing, they were smoking crack down there to make that trade. But anyway, the other guy who was available, also a Quebec superstar who was taken second by the Detroit Red Wings, went on to his fame with the LA Kings, Marcel Dion. I always wonder if Sam Pollock and the Montreal Canadiens had taken Marcel Dion first overall, how different our thoughts on Marcel Dion would be. Because we think of him sort of as, yeah, he was a nice player for the LA Kings. We don't think of him as one of the greats of the game. I don't think most people do.
No, and you know, back in those days, playing out west, you didn't get to follow them as much. You didn't know what was going on as much. And yeah, I think it totally would have changed the hockey world. And of course, would Guy Lafleur's legacy be what it is? You know, would he have put LA on the map as opposed to Gretzky doing it so many years later? All, you know, it's tough to say armchair quarterback conversations, but fascinating when you do think about those things, how decisions that are made just can change the whole history of a sport.
Yeah, and of a man. I mean, I truly believe that if Marcel Dion had been taken by the Canadiens, he would be in that category of all-time legends. And instead, he's a guy that, and he was a way better player than that. He was a great player.
And he wasn't surrounded by great players. He wasn't surrounded by great players like Guy Lafleur was. So on. So I got a quick question for you with all your reporting and sports story. Did you ever have the opportunity to interview Guy Lafleur?
I did. He came a number of years ago. The Bulldogs brought him up okay, for a so, for a signing and for a think, and sat down with him for 20 minutes or half an hour and talked about stuff. And
as a Flyers fan, did you still have that hate towards him at that point, or
no,
was it more admiration and respect at that point?
No, it's amazing with sports, to me anyway. It's amazing to me that once guys retire and you get a little bit of distance, you generally, for the most part, that those feelings go away. And perfect, another example, growing up in high school, I was an NBA fan of the Los Angeles Lakers, of Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and Byron Scott and Michael Cooper and all them, the Showtime Lakers. And I could not stand Larry Bird. Larry Bird was the epitome of everything I hated about basketball. And now I watch Larry Bird highlights and I go, man, that guy was really good. But at the time, I wouldn't have cared less if they had broken both of his legs while playing against the Lakers. I mean, you know, it was a little harsh, but you get into your team and you just despise these people. But you realize with a little distance, you realize how absolutely phenomenal they were.
Yeah. And I know what you mean there. And again, I don't know if there is that passion or that understanding amongst fans as much as when you and I were growing up. Because again, now it's all about merchandise and advertising and the almighty dollar, where back in the day, you just focused on your player and you hated any team that came into your arena, your ballpark, and beat up on your team. And now it just seems like, yeah, you know what? Kids like lots of different teams, and they'll wear five or six different player jerseys and all that. So there isn't that killer mentality, I guess, if you will. I don't know, or the passion.
Yeah, and we got to run, but one more thing about Guy Lafleur, and you know, this has been said by many, many people, but I absolutely believe it's true. We have, for the sake of safety, which is obviously key, but we have lost something with NHL players all wearing helmets and shields now. Mm-hmm. And yes, the players are much safer and the game is much faster and you have to, and I get it, and I'm not saying we should dump helmets, but there was something. Guy Lafleur, to me, also would not have become the memorable Guy Lafleur if you didn't have the blonde hair flowing as he went down the ice. There was something, it always looked like he was going so fast because that hair was flying out the back. And, you know, helmets have anonymized. Is that a word? It's taken away the individuality of so many of the players.
Yeah,
Guy Lafleur would not have been Guy Lafleur without that hair flying.
And I know we got to go, but that was also an era back then in hockey, especially when players actually respected each other, I think, a lot more than they do nowadays.
That's a discussion for another day. I said I was a fan of the Broad Street Bullies. We cannot forget. Don't forget. I mean,
I know
there were stick swinging incidents, and there were the Richard riots started because Rocket Richard clobbered Hal Lako over the head with his stick. You know, I'm not sure that players ever respected each other, but they moved a whole lot slower and they were a lot smaller and their technology and training was a lot less. And, but you know what? It's an interesting discussion. We'll next time you're on, we'll dive into did players respect each other more back in the day? But, hey, Mike Fortune, always love having you on. Thanks for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
All the best to you, Scott. Take care, my friend.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.